This is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. You see some interesting things as you travel around the country, and last week I saw something that really caught my attention. It was a man who had to be at least 70 years old. He was wearing saggy, baggy cargo shorts. He had on a T-shirt and a baseball cap backwards and tennis shoes. It was very incongruous because, frankly, it appeared to me I was looking at a 13-year-old who had a 70-year-old body. But it's just another symptom to me what's going on in the crisis of masculinity in this culture. You have everything backwards now. You've got men trying to look like boys and boys who really aren't sure at all about how to grow up into men. If you've been reading the New York Times over the past week, you've seen a couple of fascinating stories, and they are the spark for our conversation today. The first of these stories was the front page of the style section in Sunday's edition of the New York Times. It's entitled Masculinity in a Spray Can. It'll make you smile when you read it just because the story, well, it's funny. But it's about a mom in particular with two boys. They are 13 and 14, and they stink. And it's not so much that they stink because they're not bathing. They stink because they're buying all these new fragrance products that are primarily intended for 18 to 24-year-old young men. They think they smell masculine if they douse themselves in this stuff. I am told by people who work in middle schools that at times they have to actually now put regulations in place about the use of these materials, because you've got boys who are trying to say, I'm heterosexual, I'm a man, I'm on my way, and I give off the smell. That's it. And this stuff is being sold. Fascinating story that has the attention of the New York Times. Let me tell you something right there. The second story hits perhaps a little closer to home, and it's R.M. Schneiderman writing for the New York Times about how some churches and Christian ministries are trying to attract young men with mixed martial arts, extreme fighting. Now, that's one of those stories that you could look at and think that this must be so bizarre that the New York Times has sent out kind of a National Geographic team to try to find something unusual to report on it. But I'm sad to say it's not as unique, not as marginal as many of you might think. And what this reflects is the crisis of masculinity in the culture. That is the first problem. But even more than that, of our concern, is the crisis of masculinity in the church. And we're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. How do we help boys to grow up to be men? How do we encourage churches to address appropriately their ministries and the gospel itself to males, and in particular young males? The demographic, 18 to 30-year-old young men largely missing from the church, not apparently coming back in any normal pattern. The big question is, what's gone wrong? And we're going to have a very honest conversation about it today. I want to invite you to join me. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're glad to hear from you, of course, by mail. Email us at mail@albertmohler.com. Go to the website, hit the mail button. We'll get it. And at Twitter /Albert Mohler and Mohler Radio, Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to get to that issue in just a minute. First, to review some other issues in the news. The Wall Street Journal's out with one of those stories that ought to have the moral concern of every intelligent person, and certainly of Christians. Just from a Christian worldview perspective, we need to remind ourselves from time to time why gambling is wrong. We're living in a culture that has shifted its moral understanding of gambling from an almost universal prohibition just a matter of 20 or 30 years ago to the point now that states are competing with each other in terms of getting gambling revenue. And so what had been forbidden by the state just a matter of a few decades ago is now encouraged by the state. Honestly, I had no idea to the extent that these two news stories indicate. The Wall Street Journal reporting that the state of Kansas not only now licenses casinos, but the state owns its own casino, the Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Dodge City. You recognize the name of that town. The news article reflects the fact that Dodge City was once known as an immoral place. The state of Kansas thought its responsibility was to try to, well, put an end to immoral behavior. But now the state of Kansas is the corporate sponsor of gambling. And how much is the state now entwined with this? Well, the state's take from this casino is 27%. Now, folks, what we're doing here is legalizing and incentivizing a state preying on its own people. Let's just remind ourselves how gambling works. When we talk about why gambling is wrong, we remember that the Bible makes very clear statements about the appropriate link between savings and hard work and labor and investment and gain. It doesn't honor gain that is gotten in any other way. And any economic system that begins to minimize the centrality of thrift and investment and work as the way to gain financially, well, it undermines itself. It begins to tear apart its own social structure. It leads to injustice. And never is that injustice more clear than when the state, which is the institution which is supposed to be protective of citizens, begins to prey on its own citizens, to the extent that this story in the Wall Street Journal says that Kansas lottery executives actually can watch a minute-by-minute tally of action at the casino the state owns, watching how much of the take the state's going to be able to put in its own coffers. The Wall Street Journal puts it, well, pretty bluntly, all this is a little jarring for Kansas, a state with a history of trying to legislate morality following Dodge City's heyday in the late 19th century. But now, you know, it's a new set of rules. And, you know, it's not just Kansas. It's also Alabama. And what makes this interesting is that Alabama, of course, a southern state, kind of the quintessential buckle of the Bible Belt, just as you think about cultural Christianity in America and where you would think that some of the biblical, Christian, and cultural resistance to the legalization of this kind of sin business, as it was known classically, you would think the resistance would be there. However, the state of Alabama is now sponsoring casinos that are sending blimps and other forms of advertisement over the Gulf Coast of Mississippi in order to lure gamblers from Mississippi to Alabama. Now, again, it used to be that states had police authorities that used to run people out of the state for doing this kind of business. Now, with complicity with the state, these casinos are hiring blimps to fly over Mississippi beaches in order to suggest that gamblers will find a happier gambling environment if they only cross the state border and go to Alabama. Revenue in Mississippi, by the way, in the casinos there fell more than 9% in 2009 to $2.4 billion. In other words, a 9% decrease led to $2.4 billion, which industry officials in both states attributed to the economy, more competition. The battle between Alabama and Mississippi, according to the Wall Street Journal, comes as Alabama Republican Governor Bob Riley is cracking down on electronic bingo machines, a popular form of gambling in the state. He says the machines are illegal because they qualify as slot machines, which are illegal. Three Alabama casinos have had those raided. You know, all that is interesting, mostly because I don't know what it sounds like to you. To me, it sounds like absolute moral nonsense and moral madness. The fact that you would put all this state energy into trying to get slot machines out of the state while you're trying to entice people from Mississippi into your state's licensed casinos. You know, when you start looking at how injustice happens, you start looking at how the wrong kind of economic motivation and incentive begins to warp a culture's or a society's morality. It's hard to see it in any clearer form than that. Yesterday on the program, just from a Christian worldview perspective, I talked about the danger of trusting so-called experts without looking at the data. It's becoming more and more difficult in a highly routinized, highly bureaucratized technological and scientific society where, quite frankly, we're handed a great deal of data that most of us do not have the equipment mentally or academically to try to unpack. But two recent incidents have brought to our attention the danger of just assuming that someone wearing a white coat knows what he's talking about and should be trusted. Yesterday, we talked about The Lancet, which is the major medical journal in Great Britain, retracting a study that had wide influence indicating that the MMR vaccine might be linked to autism. Now it is known that that was based entirely on flawed research. But for the past decade and more, parents have been making decisions based upon a research report that scared them about a vaccine for their own children. Now we know it's false data. Yesterday, also, we dealt with the fact that the University of East Anglia is having to deal with the reality of and the aftermath of all the controversy just before the Copenhagen Climate Summit on what was basically manufactured and misused data. Now, two more stories in today's news. The Financial Times is reporting that Rajendra Pachauri, the embattled chairman of the United Nations Nobel Prize-winning climate change panel, is lashing out at critics even after it was discovered that his warnings about the Himalayan glaciers disappearing by 2035 were false. At the same time, in the United States, Pennsylvania State University is launching an investigation into one of its professors who's linked to this, the leaked emails that indicated the scientists knew they were using cooked data, partly because at least some of them were involved in doing the cooking. Just another reminder that if you're concerned with truth, you can't just take everything at face value. We need to be the people that learn how to trust the right authorities and question where this is coming from and whether the interpretation is actually where the data leads. We're going to come back to talk about the crisis of masculinity in the church, coast to coast, and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Just about everyone knows that there's some crisis of masculinity in this culture, and it is one of the products of a postmodern, very confused age. You would think that one of the natural things that would happen in a society, any normal or healthy society, is that boys would naturally have the kinds of experiences and influences and models that would lead them to progress from boyhood to manhood rather seamlessly and smoothly. By the way, in most cultures, that's happened pretty quickly. But we're in an age in which that is not the case. And even as there are certain issues, especially of Christian concern, having to do with the development of girls into women, right now the larger crisis in the society and in the church is boys growing up to be men. There are several tripwires that should tell us we're in trouble. Number one, on college and university campuses today, 60% undergraduate enrollment is female, only 40% male. Something's happening. They're not getting ready to go to college, which means in a knowledge society, a good many men are not going to be ready. We talked last week about the fact that college-educated women want to marry college-educated men. That's a problem if you've got a 60-40 differential in terms of a generation. And to be honest, that means the whole issue of male leadership in marriage and in the society, the whole thing, there's a great crisis here. The economic recession has compounded this with a vast majority of the jobs that were lost in this recession being lost in traditionally male occupations and sectors of the economy. And then when it comes to boys, good grief. You know, the smell of boyhood used to be called sweat. And yet now, this New York Times article, the front page of the style section in Sunday's paper, is about boys, especially teenage and tween boys, now thinking they can find masculinity in a can. There obviously is a search here. You know, boys are having body consciousness the way they didn't before. Girls we used to worry about, they thought they were too fat or too thin. Now there are elementary school age boys will not take their shirt off at the beach because they think they don't look muscular enough. You know, well, a 7-year-old boy is not a muscular creature. He's a food processing machine. Until he can reach the point, he can become a muscular creature. This is really weird. And if you spend any time around youth groups or, for that matter, male teenagers, you're likely to smell this. Products of, open marketing to teenage and tween boys. The New York Times refers to them as hyper-masculine guideposts like Instinct from Axe, Swagger by Old Spice, and Magnetic Attraction Enhancing Body Wash by Dial. That is... No kidding, that's the name of a product, Magnetic Attraction Enhancing Body Wash, being sold to young teenage boys. We're living in a strange age. The reason I want to point to that news article is to say we have produced this kind of confusion. We really have. And, the news article is pretty heartwarming, looking at one mom that got 13 or 14-year-old boys trying to figure all this out. And anyone who's been an adolescent male knows there's a lot of figuring out to go on. But when it comes to something like this, you look at that and say, that's just kind of a homespun little picture of a domestic confusion that points to a far greater and deeper confusion. I'm less concerned with how they smell at 13, with contrasted to how they're actually going to grow up to be men on time. Male puberty used to come about the age of 17 when Johann Sebastian Bach was a choir director in Germany. Boys' voices changed about age 17. Now it's closer to 12. Probably just the enhancement of health and diet has led to puberty falling precipitously among males. At the same time, the average age of first marriage and the onset of adult responsibilities is coming far later. So adolescence was probably between 2 and 5 in the afternoon in the 17th century. Now, all of a sudden, it's 15, 16 years. And here's the other thing that's the big issue. In the New York Times against the catalyst. So, you know, hats off to the New York Times for some really interesting and I think very capable reporting. The title of this article is Flock is Now a Fight Team in Some Ministries. It came out just this week. R.M. Schneiderman, the reporter, he takes us into the life of some churches and Christian ministries where in an effort to reach young males, in particular those who are, say, 16 and 18 up to age 30, these churches are sponsoring mixed martial arts, extreme fight teams. Folks, a few years ago, there was a novel made into a movie that was entitled Fight Club. One line from that novel has stuck with me, a very dark and nihilistic novel. Nonetheless, one line has stuck with me. The protagonist in that novel involved in this brutal, extreme fighting in which young men were literally ripping themselves apart. He said, this is what a generation of boys raised by women looks like. And we're reaping some of that in this society. But now in the church, you've got some churches deciding, well, something along the lines, if you can't beat them, join them. And with the rationale that they're trying to reach out to young males, they are sponsoring these extreme fights. And some of this is pretty rough. Let me just tell you about one. This is Extreme Ministries, a church near Nashville that doubles as a mixed martial arts academy. The school's motto is, where feet, fist, and faith collide. The next paragraph says this, Mr. Rinkin's ministry is one of a small but growing number of evangelical churches that have embraced mixed martial arts, a sport with a reputation for violence and blood that combines kickboxing, wrestling, and other fighting styles to reach and convert young men whose church attendance has been persistently low. Mixed martial arts events have drawn millions of television viewers, and one was the top pay-per-view event of 2009. Now, folks, there's a lot here. You've got young men saying that they're uninterested in church because of the feminized context of church. You've got Paul Roby, a pastor in South Mountain Community Church, Draper, Utah, saying you have a lot of troubled young men who grew up without fathers, and they're wandering, and they're hopeless, and they're lousy dads themselves, and they're just lost. They don't want to sit in pastel pews. We've raised a generation of little boys, says another observer, and they obviously don't know how to grow up to be men. Let's talk about it today. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Carlin, calling from Vancouver, Canada, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Carlin. What do you think?
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I was just thinking that churches should be engaging in more vigorous apologetics for elementary and high school boys to prepare them for the onslaught of a secular university.
You know, Carlin, that has to be a part of it. And I know there's some people out there scratching their head thinking, Carlin, what a nerd. And it's because you are talking about truth, you're talking about apologetics, and they're saying, look, if you want to reach young men, you have to do something like this extreme fighting. So let me just respond as judiciously as I know how here. I think Carlin is right. I think what he's talking about is indispensable. I'm not suggesting that that's enough in order to reach a generation of young men, many of whom don't even know the gospel yet. And the rationale of many of these churches is this is how you get them in. Now, I want to agree with Carlin about a couple of very important things here. Number one, if I'm defining what it means to grow from a man to a boy, and especially in a Christian context, so let me just go ahead and stipulate. I'm speaking of Christian families, Christian parents, Christian young people in a Christian church. Growing from boy to man has to be a growth in spiritual maturity and development, and that has to involve apologetics. Carlin, you're exactly right. In a world like this, I would suggest that the greatest fight these young men are going to be called to fight is not kickboxing. And as a matter of fact, that's lunacy to suggest that's the big fight. The big fight they're going to fight is, as you suggested, on the college campus to hold to the faith, to understand and be able to articulate the Christian faith and to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints. The greatest fight they're going to have is to get married and stay married and be faithful in marriage. The greatest fight they're going to have is not to give in to the ways of the world, whether it's the commercialism and the materialism or the sexuality and the lust. The hardest fight they're going to fight is against enemies like pornography. The hardest fight they're going to fight is the fight to be a good and faithful father raising children and to go against the tide that says that young men are to give themselves to whatever young men want to do, that it's a time of sowing wild oats and, for that matter, now, you know, spraying testosterone in terms of a can of deodorant, practicing some kind of hyper-masculinity and getting in the ring to do some kickboxing. The phone number is 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. This is a lot to talk about. We'll get right back to it on the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
One key question or set of questions every male needs to learn to ask and to answer, they're these. Number one, what's broken? And number two, how do we fix it? All right, that's a natural male instinct. What's broken? How do I fix it? So now let's address those questions to the problem of boys growing up to be men. Something's wrong. Something's broken in this society. What is it? How do we fix it? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. These two articles in the New York Times really do set it all out there. I just disseminated them, sent them out through tweets on my Twitter feed. If you're following, you can read the articles and take a look at it. It's fascinating stuff. You've got these tween boys, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, doing their very best to smell like men. They're demanding that they can use this masculinity in a spray can, as the New York Times calls it. They're doing their very best to look like little men. And, you know, there's a part of that that is very healthy. Absolutely. We want them to identify as masculine. We want them to identify as male. We want to know that they are boys who are to grow into men. But guess what? The secret's not in a can, no matter what it smells like. It's a much bigger job than that. And then you've got a far more troubling article to me, which is this Fight Club phenomenon. And let me tell you, what bothers me about this is not the masculinity. That's not it. It's not the fight that men are called to that we want to avoid. That's not what we're suggesting, avoiding the fight. It better be that men learn how to fight the right fight. And you know, there's just something about this kind of ministry that ought to be of grave concern, not because there's a natural desire of men to fight. I think even God put that there on the other side of the fall. But the problem is men have shown throughout every culture in every century that their propensity is to fight the wrong way for the wrong things. And God's glory is not in a man merely fighting, but rather fighting for those things that are right, fighting for those things that are true, and fighting in a way that brings glory to God. That's true biblical masculinity. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Mark's on the line listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I think one way that people can get involved or guys can get involved is by getting involved in men's groups or life groups, and also through mentors. I know I've had different male mentors in my life that have helped me along through different tough times or challenges, whatever, and growing up and into manhood, I guess. And I think that's something that's definitely helped me that I would encourage other guys to do as well.
Mark, a good word. I appreciate that, which is another reminder to us that every boy is looking for a man, if not men, with whom he can identify and from whom he can learn. That's just a natural human instinct, and you can see it. You know, all you have to do is, you know, moms will tell me all the time that they see their little boys, you know, 2 and 3 year old little boys trying to look like dad. Whatever dad does, that's what they try to do. There's something just holy and healthy about that. But here's where we have a problem, and this gets documented in this story about these churches of fight clubs. An enormous number of young men and boys these days don't have a dad in the home. Let me remind you of that line from the Fight Club novel. This is what a generation of boys raised by women looks like. Now, I do not say that in order to depress all the single moms out there who are trying to raise boys. I am saying that so that you'll understand there's a natural need of a boy to learn from a man what manhood is supposed to look like. And if dad is not in the home, there better be someone else. So I am going to say to you as mom, there are things you can't do for your son. That is no insult to you. That is no failure in you. That is the fact that you are not a man. And that's just something that I hope you will orchestrate to overcome, that you will put intentionality in to overcome. And let me just suggest that is one of the most important issues for the Christian church. Mark nailed it on this. One of the most important ministries for the Christian church right now is that it ought to be the place where men act like men in order that boys, not only their own sons, it starts there, but that all sons would learn what it's like to be a man. And that defined in biblical terms, not in mere cultural terms, but in biblical terms. Should sports be a part of that? Almost assuredly. Should attention to the kind of masculinity that will most honor God be a part of that? That's absolutely essential. But, you know, a lot of that comes by teaching. But my guess is even more comes by the kind of teaching that isn't recognized as teaching. The kind of modeling, the kind of things that happens in a conversation, the kind of thing that happens when a boy sees how a man reacts, how a man controls his emotions, how a man channels his energy, how a man protects his wife and his children, how a man stands against the cultural tide, how a man resists temptation, how a man gives himself generously, even extravagantly, to the things of God, how a man knows how to risk for the sake of the gospel, and also knows how to preserve the things that must be preserved. There is a masculinity that is needful, but you're not going to find it in the Fight Club. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program here on the campus of the Moody Bible Institute for Founders Week. And I preached this morning on Romans 1 at the Moody Memorial Church. I'll put up a link to that, by the way. The audio is available online. It's a phenomenal thing to be here. This is the church and the school started by the great evangelist D.L. Moody. And I'm glad to tell you that so long after the death of D.L. Moody, it's good to be in a place that is so faithful. And when I'm here, I tell people all the time, I'm so encouraged to be with students here. We actually have some students from Moody, from Dryer Hall Floor 2, sitting right here in the studio with me. And we've been kind of workshopping this issue, even as we've been talking about it here on the air. And when you're on a campus like this, you're in kind of ground zero for where things are happening in a healthy way. And I'm glad to say the institution I get to serve is the same way. We want to see masculinity in our students, the men. We want men to be men. And we want them to take on a style of Christian ministry that is bold and masculine and appropriate and biblical in every way. My concern with this Fight Club stuff, especially the extreme stuff where they're going for blood and gore and all the rest, is I don't believe that Christians are called to beat up a brother for Christ as rather either a spectacle or some kind of show of strength. I'm not opposed to all martial arts. I'm frankly incompetent to say a whole lot about the entire field of martial arts, but I know that there can be nobility in them as well. I'm talking about those that are brutalized. That's what's really the point here. It's brutalizing forms of martial arts that draw a crowd. And I have no doubt you will draw a male crowd with that. The question is, are you drawing them in such a way that you can actually make clear that the real fight is the fight of faith, the good fight of faith? The Apostle Paul uses that language. He talks about being a good soldier, a good athlete. Fight's a very essential part of the Christian faith, but we better be clear we're fighting for the right reasons in the right manner. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Emory's listening to WFIA. Go ahead, Emory.
Yes, Dr. Mueller, thanks so much for this topic and for all that you do in ministry. I agree with your position as pertains to the extent of mixed martial arts, but when I was growing up, One of the strongest levels of ministry we had for our young guys was having martial arts, and true martial arts focuses on faith and the fitness component, along with our basketball. So, along with Bible study, which we had to attend, and Sunday school in order to participate. So there's a parallel that can be enriching, at least for our example here, we're trying to even continue to model now.
Emory, an essential word. Thanks for that. I appreciate that. It's a good word of personal testimony. And I do understand that there are forms of martial arts that fit right in the nobility of sport and fitness to the glory of God. That can be a good thing. Fitness to its own end, that's not so helpful. Fitness to the glory of God, that's great. Emory, I appreciate your call. That's a very important word to have inserted here. Let's go to Corydon, Indiana. Rod, what are you thinking?
Yes, sir. What I was thinking is we need to get men more active with boys and with young men's organizations, just to set an example also. Just for instance, with the scouting movement, I do some scouting, and we don't have as many men involved as we do have women. A lot of guys are letting their wives take over for them, and I think men need to step up the plate there.
Hey, Rod, I got to tell you, I rejoice in what you just said. It makes me a very happy man. And so I'm just going to take advantage here and go ahead and risk getting a lot of hate mail. My father would not let me be a Cub Scout because women ran it. No, my father's wasn't against women. He was married to one. My father, on the other hand, thought that boys, when they're together as boys in a boys' organization, need to be taught by, nurtured by, controlled by, chastised by, encouraged and inspired by men. So I could be a Boy Scout, and I was a Boy Scout. I was thrilled to be a Boy Scout. Those are golden years, but I wasn't allowed to be a Cub Scout. Now, I'm not saying Christians should flee the Cub Scouts. Please understand me. I'm not issuing a blanket judgment against the Cub Scouts. I'm simply saying what Rod said here has a basis in fact. Boys need the influence of men, and as soon as possible, and never more apparently, graphically, clearly than when they're being raised, especially without a dad in the home. That presents even the greater urgency for boys to be in the context of where boys are being influenced by men. And obviously, this is the right kind of man. And Rod made another point. I hope you were listening to this clearly. Please, this is a picture not only of certain organizations, such as scouting organizations and volunteer organizations. It is far more devastatingly a picture of the church, where men evacuate positions of responsibility and leadership. Women are stepping in, and God bless them. In many cases, these women are simply doing what must be done because women turn out to be far more faithful than men. What does that say to boys? When in the church, women appear so much more steadfast, so much more faithful, so much more tenacious, so much more willing to serve than men. There's the scandal. And when that happens, we should not be surprised that boys are very confused. If boys look and say, okay, that's women's work, they're not going to want to do it. And I know that there are moms out there who are troubled by that, because they'll say, you know, well that's just a gender-based judgment being made by boys. Well, wake up and smell the coffee. That's what boys are doing. They're trying to figure out how to be a man. And where they see that there are no men in leadership and in activity and in responsibility, they're not going to want to go there. Not only that, they're going to assume that it's not manly to go there. And in the heart of every boy is a great desire to grow up to be a man. And if the men are in places that really are collectives of irresponsibility, that's where boys are going to head. If their picture of manhood is sitting before the sofa doing nothing more than letting the world go by while they watch whatever is the brain drug of the hour, then that's what they're going to think they're supposed to do. Hang out with other guys in irresponsibility. Refuse to grow up. Do not give yourself to marriage. Do not commit yourself to fidelity. Do not welcome children and raise those children in the love, nurture, and admonition of the Lord. Then that's what they're going to see as their own ambition. Owen's calling. Listen to WFIA. Owen, what do you think?
Dr. Mueller, I just want to say that I believe that the men of the church should come alongside these young men and boys that have had an absent father one way or the other and disciple them in the faith. And I'd also like to add that as a past martial artist, this extreme fighting is not the answer.
Thanks for the call, Owen, and you nailed it on the responsibility. Let me tell you, the church is a picture of the kingdom of God that is here and coming. And the church has to be a place where there would not be a boy who is not under the direct influence of a godly man. The church ought to be a place where no boy goes to play his Little League game without some man in the stands cheering him on. The church ought to be the place where no boy goes through the passages of life with no man to celebrate with him and guide him through that process. The church ought to be the place where it's not just her son or his son, they are our sons. Yes, parents have the first responsibility, but the church has a responsibility. We will answer to the Lord Jesus Christ for how we minister to each other, and we are failing our boys and young men. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, this article in the New York Times really gets to the heart of the crisis in the local church by making very clear that by observation of many young males, the church is a feminized environment. A part of that is what we've done to the local church in terms of confusion, in which men are so passive rather than active. They are failing to lead, failing to model. They're often spectators just at church as they are at an athletic encounter, only less passionately involved. And that's being communicated downwind. That's being caught by boys who say, all right, this is women's work. And then, quite frankly, churches send signals that just aren't healthy. Sometimes there are even aesthetic signals in terms of the kind of songs that are sung, which are you know, someone said this morning, like Jesus is my boyfriend kind of songs. That's not going to help. They need to be robust songs of biblical and theological conviction that make clear why the God we worship is so worthy of worship. We also, on the other hand, need to push back a little bit and say that we're going to have to redefine some terms, because in the Bible, masculinity is not simply the replication with Bible verses of the kind of masculinity found in the culture. It's not just Fight Club, you know, with Christian songs. It is understanding that there is a fight to which every man is called. And by the way, the progress of growing from a boy to man, don't you misunderstand. That's a fight. It is a fight for every young boy to grow up to be a man. And that's the kind of fight that anticipates the great fight of his manhood for Christians, which is going to be to be faithful, to be deployed for the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, to be willing to stand against the tide, to be willing to take a stand for the truth, to be willing to fully embrace and to commit himself to marriage. And not just to the conceptual defense of marriage, but to actually being married, finding his joy in being married, finding a joy in his wife, channeling his sexual energy entirely in marriage, being faithful in marriage, and raising children, doing good work to the glory of God. Now, obviously, there are complications here. We could come up with a myriad of programs to follow this up. There are some young men who are called to be single or celibate, but for the Christians, that means for the cause of the gospel. That means they're even more forward deployed for the cause of Christ and the Great Commission and the gospel. There are many men right now who say, well, all right, I have time on my hands. What should I be doing? Well, go to the church, go to the elders of the church, the leaders of the church, the pastors of the church, and talk to them and say, how can I best be deployed? That's a good place to start. And when you look out there and you see young boys, teenagers, young men looking for male models, you need to understand that's not just a problem to observe. Let me get back to that again. It's a problem to solve. One of the basic issues for a Christian man is the same as for every man. Find the questions, what's wrong, and then answer it with how it's fixed. Be a part of the solution, not merely an observer of the problem. We'll continue this discussion in days ahead. Live from Chicago, Illinois, you've been listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.